Welcome to Joyful Eating. I'm your host, Jules Clancy, a former food scientist and winemaker turned cookbook author and health coach. I've discovered a simple way to have a joyful relationship with food without sacrificing pleasure or my waistline, and I can help you get there too. Listen on to find out how. Hello, hello. Okay, so welcome to Joyful Eating. And today we're actually going to be talking, we need to rename it to Joyful Drinking, because I'm going to talk to you about alcohol. So, you know, a fun topic that lots of us food lovers and wine lovers struggle with. And, you know, I still am in this place where I kind of still can't believe that I actually have come so far in my relationship with alcohol into actually getting to a place where it's, you know, it's not a drama in my life. It's something that I can take or leave. It's like not this big thing anymore. And it definitely hasn't always been this way. So today I'm just going to share with you a little bit about my history and my story with alcohol, you know, what it used to be like, and then, you know, what it's like now. And then I'm going to share with you kind of this key steps that I took and like how I actually tamed my relationship with alcohol. But this is a process that took several years. So I hope you find something inspiring with this. So in terms of my history with alcohol, I was just thinking about it and it's really interesting. Like neither of my parents were big drinkers. Like, you know, Dad would have a beer if he went to the pub and my mom would have a glass of champagne, but they weren't like drinking every day type of people. But for some reason, I don't know, I was just thinking about it. Like when I was at school, I just really fell in love with the idea of like wine. And I guess it stemmed from, you know, the whole idea of food and wine going together so well. And so when I was, you know, leaving school, I did toss up the idea of becoming a winemaker and studying winemaking. But I decided that I didn't want to do that, and because I wanted to move to Sydney and there wasn't any winemaking courses in Sydney. So I ended up studying food science instead. But I had that, there was like something that drew me to alcohol even before I started really drinking at all. And then, of course, you know, at uni, I really, you know, got into my booze a lot. And, you know, then, and from then on, it was, you know, there was always this kind of love-hate relationship with alcohol where, you know, I really enjoyed the buzz. I really had a lot of fun with it. But then there were so many times that I drank to excess and, you know, regretted the whole thing. But I had this, like, thing with about wine, and I really loved wine. And so, you know, in my 20s, I really got into wine a lot. And I actually decided in my mid 20s to have a career change and to go off and study winemaking at university. But this time I was able to do it distance education. Then I actually had a career change and actually started working in the wine industry. And did that for about 5 years. So, you know, then wine was my job. So it was like part of every day. It was part of, you know, the culture, the people that I was working with. And, you know, I saw a lot of very sad stories. You know, there was a lot of joy around alcohol, but there was also a lot of sad stories as well. And long story short, much better at drinking wine than I am at making it. So I ended up coming back to food. But, you know, wine was a big part of my life. And then it was probably about, I don't know, maybe 4 or 5 years ago, I guess definitely once I had children that I started to want to take some steps to actually change my relationship with alcohol. And, you know, I was never someone that had to drink absolutely every day. I usually had at least one alcohol-free day a week. But I was definitely, you know, the type of person who would finish off the bottle. I was the person that was always, you know, I'd be in a restaurant and I'd be just thinking about the next glass of wine or the next bottle and, you know, always looking for more booze. Whereas some of my friends would be easily satisfied with what they'd have, I would be thinking about, you know, wine more and more. It was definitely something that I struggled with for a long time. But anyway, so fast forward, so probably about 4 or 5 years ago, I decided, you know, that it was time to do something about my drinking and, you know, just getting sick of it and really wanting a different way. And so now I'll just talk you through the process of how I actually came to have a healthy relationship with alcohol. And I think the first thing that really sparked that was just having a really compelling reason to change. So there was the thing about being a parent and I wanted to be a good role model for my children. But I also started to have a lot of problems with my sleep. And I really noticed that if I had wine, yeah, I wake up and I wouldn't be able to get back to sleep. And so that was like a really big motivator for me to look at my drinking. And then just learning more about, you know, the actual detrimental impact of drinking, even for like moderate drinking. So it's interesting, this isn't so well known, but the risk of breast cancer, even with just like one glass of wine a week, your risk significantly increases. And in the show notes, I'll link to the studies. But yeah, like there is a clear link between even just, you know, really moderate alcohol intake and cancer. And yeah, you know, my mum died from breast cancer when she was 63, and my grandmother, on my dad's side, had breast cancer. So, you know, it's something that's really on top of mind. So those reasons, my sleep, being a good role model, and the cancer risk really gave me a compelling reason to change. So the first thing that I started doing, and I owe this to Brooke Castillo from the Life Coach School podcast, which is an excellent podcast and you should totally check it out. She really encouraged me to start planning in advance. And that really began to change my alcohol intake. And so why do we want to plan our alcohol in advance? So the major reason for it is that when you're planning things in advance, you can only, like the only part of our brain that can plan and think about the future and future consequences is the prefrontal cortex. So it's like the most adult part, a grown-up part of our brain. So if you're planning in advance and you have to use your prefrontal cortex to make decisions, which means that you're making decisions that are good for you now, but also good for you in the long term. Whereas if you're not planning and you're just like winging it and making decisions in the moment, particularly after you've already started to drink, then you're not using your prefrontal cortex. You're using the emotional part of your brain, and its job is to seek pleasure and avoid pain. So of course, if you're using a part of your brain that's designed to seek pleasure, then you know, question of should I have more wine is always, the answer will always be yes. So yeah, planning in advance, that's the number one reason, is that you're using a better part of your brain. You're accessing a higher part of your brain to make decisions for your long-term well-being. And the other reason why planning in advance is really helpful is that when we plan and we like visualize things happening, it's actually the same as us practicing doing it. And you can, so there's research on this in like the sports arena and in music as well. There's research where they'll get, you know, three groups of people, and they'll get one where they don't change anything, they're the control. Then they'll get another where they get them to practice, you know, shooting hoops with a basketball physically, like actually get out there on the court and practice. And then there'll be another group that they'll just get to visualize and practice in their mind shooting hoops. And it's really interesting when you look at the results. Of course, the group that doesn't do any practice at all, you know, doesn't really improve. The group that, you know, actually physically practices will improve their ability to shoot, you know, three, whatever they're called. But the group that just imagines practicing actually almost gets as much increase in their improvement as the group that physically practices. So this idea of, you know, visualizing and practicing things in our mind, like so practicing navigating difficult situations, thinking through ahead of time, helps us make better decisions in the moment. So that's another really big reason why planning in advance works. And how do you do that? Like all I did was I just made a commitment to myself that any day before I started drinking, whenever that was going to be, that I would just decide exactly how many glasses I was going to drink before I started drinking. And, you know, of course, there were times where that worked well and I would say, I'm going to have three glasses of wine, and I would stick to my three glasses of wine. But of course, there were many times where I didn't, but I didn't let that stop me. Like I believed in that this planning was going to help. And so I kept going with the planning. And that really, you know, it started to change. Like I started to stick to my plan more. And the more that I did that, the more confidence that I had, and it kind of built on itself. So then the third thing that I did was really learning to manage my self-talk in the moment. And those little thoughts that we think are so powerful, and they really change the actions that we take. And so by just slowing down and starting to pay attention to what I was telling myself in the moment when I was tempted to, you know, deviate from my plan, really helped me learn how to stick to my plan more and more. An example of this was on my birthday last year. We were having lunch at Rebel Rebel, like favorite restaurant in Canberra, like local town. And I'd actually planned to have a glass of wine. And then the waiter's like, you know, would you like another? In the moment, I was like, it's my birthday. You know, the self-talk was, oh yeah, it's my birthday. I deserve it. Something along those lines. And so I was like, yes, of course. I'd love another glass. And then I got the second glass of wine and I immediately felt that, oh, I didn't really want this, but I'd ordered it and it was my birthday. So I drank it. But then I just, you know, I felt I didn't enjoy the second glass anywhere near as much as the first. And also like, you know, then I just felt a bit fuzzy for the rest of the day. You know, you get that kind of, it's not a hangover, but you just feel a bit blah. And so rather than, of course, beating myself up on my birthday for going against my plan, I just paid attention to that self-talk and I noticed what is going on. And I thought to myself, you know, what can I learn from this? And so next time I'm in that situation where I've planned one glass and I'm thinking about not having more, I was just going to remind myself about, you know, my birthday lunch and how crappy I felt afterwards. Then the next time that happened was, you know, it's out to lunch with my Irishman. We were actually at the same restaurant. And the waiter came, poured my wine. I'd planned one glass and he poured it and it was a really small glass. And I'm like, oh man, you know, it's a really small pour. And I'm looking, comparing my glass to Glenn's glass and it's like, his is huge. And I'm like, man. And then I started to like have the thoughts of, oh, you know, this was a really small glass. Maybe I should have another one, you know, that would be okay. And then I just instantly caught those thoughts. It was like, you know, it happens in a matter of seconds. And I was like, no. Remember your birthday, you know, just enjoy that one glass. It's better when you stick to the plan. And so it just a few seconds and then all that kind of should I not just gone. And I, you know, had my glass, really enjoyed it and then switched to sparkling water. And, you know, we had a lovely lunch and it was really, really great. So that self-talk thing is really huge. And one thing I would say if you're new to this is like thought of it's better when. So if you catch yourself wanting to deviate from your plan, reminding yourself of all the reasons why it's better when you stick to your plan is really, really game changing in terms of actually sticking to your plan. Then another thing that a byproduct of this whole alcohol journey was learning to feel my feelings. And, you know, because when you're drinking alcohol, that's a way to buffer. And so you kind of, you know, it numbs you out so you don't feel your feelings. So that's a separate topic for a whole nother podcast because it applies to emotional eating as well. But that was a skill that I did have to learn along the way. And then another thing that I found really helpful is just like exploring and finding alternate beverages that I really enjoy just as much as a glass of wine. And I think for me, I make my own kombucha, but I actually ferment it. So it's kind of quite dry. So it has that kind of acidity that you get with a nice crisp glass of Riesling or white wine. And the other thing I do is I do a secondary fermentation. So it's sparkling. So like champagne. And it's really amazing. Like the flavors that you can get in kombucha are just as, you know, complex as, you know, that you can get in a glass of champagne, but without all the booze. So I really love my kombucha. So for me, like sitting down to dinner with a bottle of homemade kombucha is just as delicious as having, you know, a glass of wine. So I don't feel like I'm missing out on anything because I've got something just as enjoyable to drink. And the other beverage that I really love is tea. And so I've just, you know, really explored tea. And actually with my coaching, my coaching group, we've got a thread called Tea Hounds. So rather than booze hounds, we're turning into tea hounds where, and I, you know, enjoy my tea just as much. I have heaps of teas and there's a lot going on there. So, you know, tea or kombucha may not be your thing, but there will be a beverage that you can find and, you know, treat it as an experiment and see what works for you. But it can be really good fun. And the final thing I'd say with this is that, you know, it's really a journey and it's all about practice and not perfection. So don't beat yourself up when you go off your plan, but, you know, learn from your failures, learn from things that don't work. You know, alcohol is a really highly addictive drug. There's a reason why, you know, people become alcoholic. So, you know, don't be tough on yourself if you do struggle with this a little bit. And actually, yeah, I should have mentioned at the beginning, I'm not an addiction expert at all. And if you do think that you need help, definitely get the extra help. I'm just sharing, this is my story and this is what worked for me. Okay, so our key takeaway from today is that you can change your relationship with alcohol. And how to go about doing that is to actually have a lot of really strong reasons why you want to do it, because it isn't going to be easy and that's going to keep you going. Commit to planning in advance. I can't stress how important that is. And then, you know, learning to manage your self-talk, bring awareness to your self-talk, and that awesome phrase of, you know, it's better when, use that as much as you need. And then finally, just evaluate and learn and you'll get better and better. And then next thing you know, you'll be like me, maybe recording a podcast telling other people how you've completely changed your relationship with alcohol. So I hope you found that helpful and look forward to chatting with you next week. Before you go, this is the best part. So if you enjoyed Joyful Eating, subscribe to the podcast, and I'd love to send you a copy of my free cookbook called 6 Ingredients 20 Minutes, Simple Whole Foods for Joyful Weeknight Dinners. It's full of easy recipes so delicious they'll satisfy even the biggest food snob. Just Google Stone Soup and you'll find it.